speaker. If you find it necessary to have to have a conversation with someone next to you, please quietly take it outside and try not to have any distractions for the speaker. Appreciate it. Before I do announce this man, I would like to say a few good words about him. It really, truly does. This man has a message, man, and it's a pleasure to be able to introduce him, to know him as a friend. I've worked with this guy before. I know he's a hard-working man. He walks with esteem and integrity, and I'm looking forward to hearing him. I love the guy, man. Jessup, Santa Maria.
My name is Joseph. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober. And as nerve-wracking as this is, it's absolutely an honor and a privilege. Thanks for asking me to share, Kristen. And the other day when she asked me to share, I was like, yeah, in my head I'm like, absolutely not, you know? And then, you know, but my response was, sure, why not? You know what I mean? Like, how could I not come and do this? It's nothing, really. You know what I mean? Like, I'd much rather be listening to guys like Leonard, Cher, Darren, Billy, you know, guys that I look up to in this program that have shown me how to walk this walk and live life one day at a time, but here I am. So, I was like, well, why not just ask her to let you wait till the next week after you celebrate your birthday, you know what I mean? And I was like, that's just selfish, man. She asked me to share this day, just share, you know what I mean? So, anyways, I mentioned I'm an alcoholic. Can I say the serenity prayer? Is that okay with everyone? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right, so I was born here in Santa Maria in 1975, and soon after, if I don't look at many of you, that just makes it easier on me. You know what I mean? I might look at Darren every once in a while, but I was born here in Santa Maria, and soon after, my mom separated from my dad, took us down to Palm Springs, and so isolation was kind of a big part of my story from early on. She didn't know anybody down there, no family, no friends, and you know, my parents are. I don't blame anything about me on my parents. You know, like. I believe they did the best job they could, but my parents are exact opposites. My mom is a very calculated, very disconnected, emotionally cut off person. My dad's very open, accepting, loving, openly, you know. But I was raised by my mom till 13, 14 years. So, you know, just that coldness kind of just came over me, you know what I mean? And it was me at a young age. And there were some other things going on. Like, I've shared this, you know, when I spoke before. It's like I was, at a young age, man, I was being molested by a male family member, you know, and I put a lot of weight in that. I put a lot of fear in that, you know, and I carried that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I mean? Like, I carried that shame. Like, I had done something wrong, when really the only thing I had done wrong was not tell anybody about it, you know what I mean? So I had a lot of guilt and shame, you know, and I put a lot of power in that, and that kind of molded me, you know what I mean? That fear and that disconnection kind of molded me, and, you know, so when I moved up here to my dad's, like, I just kind of fell in with that crowd, you know, the surfers and the skaters, we fell into partying, you know what I mean? Drinking, smoking weed, and speed soon became part of that bunch. And we liked to surf, skate, fight, and fornicate. That was our deal, you know. And anything that fell in line with that was acceptable to us. You know, grade, school, work really wasn't really important to us. We worked to party, you know what I mean? And we had a lot of fun, you know, but what I didn't realize was that alcohol was soon becoming the main focus of my life, you know, at a young age. You know, I'd say well into 14, 15, 16 years old, like, alcohol was really our primary purpose above all things, you know. Whatever it was was fixed around alcoholism and drug addiction for us, you know, and like I say, whatever fell in line with that family soon, you know, I began to disconnect myself from the most important people in my life, and those people, you know, it's like, we hear it all the time, it's like, they're just as confused about my behavior as I later became, you know what I mean, like, I don't come from a family full of addicts and drug and alcoholics, you know what I mean? I don't. They're for the most part, they're really good people. And they were confused as to why my absolute need for disconnection from them. And damn, it's hot in here. What time is the bathroom break at, man? No, but yeah, so, you know, teenage years are really unproductive. You know, I grew up, I moved up here to live with my dad around 13, 14 years old, and he's a masonry contractor, you know, brick, block, stone, and so hard work was pretty much mandatory in my later teenage years living with my dad. And he's a hard worker, you know, from a long line of hard workers, and he was really put off as to why I wouldn't put myself into the family business, you know, because he wanted to build something and hand it down to me. And I, you know, partying was just more important than that. You know, I didn't see the importance of that. And he was hurt. I later learned that he was very hurt by the actions of that. You know, he wanted to hand something that meant something to him down to his eldest son. And I just couldn't see the importance of it. And that broke my dad's heart, man. That broke my dad's heart, and so my teenage years were wrapped up with a lot of dysfunction, a lot of disrespect. And 18 years old, I met my future wife, and we had a kid right before I turned 20 years old. We had our daughter Ariana, beautiful child. Couldn't ask for anything more than a little girl. And I had a beautiful wife too, man. Later got married to her when our child was like 3 years old. But the thing is we're partying hard. Like, for us, from what I understand, is we were partying hard, you know, and that life is just not conducive with raising a family. You know what I mean? There's nothing. I could not provide them with a safe living environment to raise that family in, you know. And I was pushing them away. And I couldn't see it, you know. I couldn't see it. I thought these people were here to stay, as long as, you know what I mean. I thought they were here to stay. But when I was about 23, 24 years old, seriously wrapped up in alcoholism and drug addiction, my wife told me I had to go, you know. And I couldn't understand why. And later on, she told me that. That she had really emotionally separated herself from me probably a year prior to me actually having to go. And that floored me, man. That floored me. And I soon fell deep into alcoholism and drug abuse. As if I wasn't already, it just got worse and worse. You know, I was resentful because, and you hear it in meetings, I was resentful at my family because I couldn't drink and use the way I wanted to, you know, the way I felt I wanted to. Like, totally out of control was what I wanted, you know what I mean? And I can't do that with having a baby and a wife in the house, you know what I mean? And I was resentful at them. I disrespected them, mistreated them, you know what I mean? And because I'm always either going up or coming down, you know what I mean? There's no balance in my life. I'm either up, going up, or I'm coming off, you know what I mean? And trying to work and hold down a family life in that, it's a total lie, man. You know what I mean? It's a total lie. I can't do it effectively. I cannot function in alcoholism while, you know, in active alcoholism and be healthy. There's nothing healthy about me in it, you know? The way I treat people, the way I react to situations. Ask Brandon, man, I still react awkwardly, you know what I mean? Like the simplest of things, you know what I mean? And I'm just a total dick about it. So, I don't know, man. I'm here to work on it, though, you know? Man, I don't know. Is this thing almost done?
45 more minutes.
Yeah.
So 24, 25 years old, man, we split up, and I soon, I think I moved out, and I started living on friends' couches and stuff, and I actually got my own place for a minute. I think I was working for a little bit while longer, and I just could not handle the pain of being separated from my family any longer. You know what I mean? It's like alcohol, the effect that alcohol provides, that numbing effect, you know, of all emotion, that's soon what I needed above all things, man. And I was unemployable, you know, I wasn't showing up to work. And when I was showing up to work, I wasn't producing, you know, what my employers needed. So I didn't last much longer. I look back and I've had everything in life that what I understand a man to be should have fought and died for, you know what I mean? But yet I just spit in the face of those good things. I've had jobs where I would die for these jobs today, you know what I mean? Prevailing wage jobs where I'm way overpaid from my experience and I couldn't show up, you know what I mean? I wouldn't show up, you know? Because getting loaded was more important, you know what I mean? And today, it's not like that. You know, the little things I have are important to me. But back then, I couldn't see it. I couldn't see the importance of this woman and my child dedicate. You know, all they wanted was to be loved and protected by me, and I couldn't provide that for them. You know what I mean? And I broke her heart. And I remember her telling me multiple times, please get some help. You know, please get some help. All I want is to be with you. You know, and I couldn't see it, and I wasn't willing to find the help. I had no idea that there was, you know what I mean, that there was a solution to what I was going through, what I was feeling, and my reactions to life. I had no idea there was a solution to all that. So fell deeper into alcoholism and drug addiction, totally unemployable, totally disconnected from family and from self too. You know what I mean? Like, I had no idea who and what I was anymore. I got wrapped up in people that, you know, a criminal lifestyle, that I did a lot of things that had a lot of shame and guilt behind, and in and out of incarceration for years, you know. Not connected with my family. I remember hearing my dad say one time, he's like, when I heard that you'd be in jail, like, I was relieved. You know what I mean? Because I knew where you were. I knew that you were protected, you know, that you were alive still. And then I still could not see, you know, what was going on. Totally, it's like walking through life with the blinders on, you know what I mean? It's like, I can't see anything. All I can see is the next, you know, the next drink or the next fix. And my life became wrapped up in that completely. Totally dysfunctional, homeless. You know, get a car, lose a car, get a girl, lose a girl, you know, get a couch, lose a couch. You know what I mean? It's like, nothing was important to me if it didn't have to do with getting loaded. You know what I mean? And every motive, every breath, every waking action that I took was in the pursuit of getting and staying loaded, you know, for a lot of years, for about 10 years. And like I said, in and out of incarceration, that's the only thing that could ever clean me up was getting locked up, you know. I'd spend, you know, 6, 8, 9 months in jail, get out, start all over again, you know. No idea that there was a solution. And then I had a friend that we were rolling with who had been, you know, sober one time before, and we got locked up somewhere around 2008. And, you know, he's like, come on, let's go to this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You know what I mean? He had experience in it before. And so I went to this meeting, and this old man from the Mesa group, I think it was, Doc, this old man, raspy voice, you know, cool old guy, man. And he came and shared his experience with us over there in the jail in San Luis Obispo County. And I don't remember much, but I remember reading like How It Works or something like that, and I was just like blown away, you know what I mean? I was like floored at like hearing the truth about me for the first time in so many years, you know what I mean? Like to a T, like constitutionally incapable of, you know what I mean? Like I was like, holy shit, man, this is, it's too much real for me, you know what I mean, right here. And actually I I got out of jail that time. That was like 2008, late 2008, 2009. And I was able to put together 6 months or so. I was coming to meetings over at the Ben Wiley Alano Club, you know, I got a sponsor, I think Randy, young Randy, I asked him to be my sponsor, you know, he had a few years, I liked what he shared, and then, but I wasn't taking any of his suggestions, you know, I'd call him for a couple days, I'd stop calling him, I stayed sober for about 6 months, and then my aunt and uncle, they own a construction company, and they got this contract out at the University of Merced, building dorm rooms out there. And they asked me to come on with them. So I got about 6 months of sobriety, no foundation really in recovery. I had heard a few things, you know what I mean? I had heard a few things that you guys had talked about, so a couple things sunk in. But I wasn't really active in anything. I was doing a lot of meetings, but I wasn't participating really in what we considered recovery to be, you know what I mean? I wasn't working the steps. I wasn't being of service. I wasn't holding myself accountable to anybody. And then, so I got this job, and so we move over to Merced to work on this university, on these dorm rooms, and we're out in the sticks. The university out there is kind of out, separated out of town. My aunt and uncle, they rent these two homes right next to each other out in the sticks. And then I'm living with 35 to 40 other guys in these two homes, right? And so I last one day. I last one day. I think I had a root beer after work the first day, dude. And then every day after work was like a fucking party. You know what I mean? 35, 40 construction workers. It was nuts. You know what I mean? And I lasted one day, and soon I was drinking every night. And then within 3 or 4 weeks, maybe a month, I started coming home and chipping away with speed again, you know? And I was using on the weekends, going to work. Within a couple weeks of that, I was having to take it to work with me, you know, to get through the week. Pretty soon, obviously, as it becomes, you know, I have to have it every day through the work week. My production goes down. My need for, you know, substance and alcohol goes up, and that was when, in that time, was when I got to, in my head, I was like, these people are right, man, this obsession, because I remember thinking at frickin' 9:30 a.m. that I need a drink, you know what I mean, and it every day out there, it's like 100 to 112 every day of the week up there, you know what I mean, it's a relenting heat, you know, and I just want, and to me, it's like that drink was going to cure some, you know what I mean? It was going to relieve me of this heat somehow, when it probably would have just knocked me out, you know? But so every day after work, I'm drinking, I'm using, and I'm coming home. And really, I have no place to live during that time, but it didn't really matter because my checks were just astronomical. You know, I remember I wouldn't even have to cash a check for, like, 3 weeks at a time, because we weren't spending any money out there, just drinking and sleeping and going to work every day. So it was about early November of that year, 2009, I got laid off because the job started slowing down. I had, I think it was like $13,000-$14,000 in uncashed checks that I had, you know, from this job, and I went on a sick one. You know, I went on a sick one. Yeah. And by so mid to later November when I got laid off, and then it was Christmas time, so I was rolling hard, and my aunt looked at me and she was just like, and she could see right through, you know, at Christmas time at the family's house, I had run out of money, I'd run through all that money, you know what I mean, in a month, and my aunt just looked at me and she started crying, she took me outside and she started crying, and I started crying, you know what I mean, I wasn't having fun anymore. I have no idea how to stop this train, you know what I mean? And I was broken. I was broken as a man, as a father, as a son. I had no idea what was going on inside me, but I think that's kind of when
I started having this psychic change, you know what I mean? I wanted something different so bad, yet I had no idea how to find it, you know, and where it was or what it was, even for that matter. So it was Christmas time, and all the money's gone, and I'm falling back into old criminal behavior to keep the ball rolling for myself, you know what I mean? Because that's all I know. And so I pick up, mind you, I've been on some sort of probation since I was 16 years old. And I pick up, I think it was like two or three more felony charges, you know, doing what we do to stay loaded on a daily basis. And I picked up these charges down in Santa Barbara because I felt like I had done enough damage up here, you know what I mean? Like, seriously, like investigators, bounty hunters, like these are commonplace for me, you know, when I'm loaded. And so I moved my little operation down to Santa Barbara County, and I picked up some new charges down there, and they came all the way up to Oceano and found me, you know. So and when they did, I was relieved, man. Like I was beaten up. I was relieved that they had found me. This wasn't the first time that bounty hunters had come to my family's house, my girlfriend's house. They've raided her house before, and they've talked to my dad directly. My dad's, he's turned me in before, you know what I mean? And I never felt resentment about that, you know? I knew that he did the right thing when he had to do that. But this time when they found me, I was relieved, man. So I go to Santa Barbara, and they had my name wrong on the docket, and they OR'd me, you know what I mean? Like, I'm already on felony probation, I've got three more felonies, and they OR me, you know what I mean? I'm like blown away by this, you know what I mean? So I'm going to court, they OR'd me, I got, I think I was in jail for like a week that time, they released me. And the first thing I did was come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. The first thing I did, man. I knew that something was going on here. I had heard you guys changing your lives, and I knew that I better find some kind of something, you know what I mean, to help me. And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I dove into meetings, doing 3 to 5 meetings a day here and at the other club. You know, back then meetings started at 6:30 a.m., finished up at 8 p.m., you know. So I was in meetings all day long, totally unemployable. I think I had, you know, I had unemployment coming in from that job that I was on. So financially, I was okay for a minute. Had to beg my dad to let me back in the house. You know, he's tired. I'm tired. Everybody's tired of me. And so I dive back into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to court every month. And I told them right away, look, this is my name. So they're like, all right, come back next month and we'll trace down your docket. I get there next month and they're floored that they let me out. You know what I mean? They can't, they're like, we can't allow you to walk around on the streets and what's going on right here. And what was the trip was I had court moved over here to Santa Maria by then. And people had appointed themselves in AA to come to court with me every month. It was a trip, man. It was like there was Sarah, Bob, Lisa came. I mean, there was Terry and Diane. They were there every month. There was like, I always had like 5 or 6 people. I had no idea what these people were coming to court with me for. Like, I'm like, I'm a piece of fucking shit. You know what I mean? Dude, don't back me. You know what I mean? I'm spineless. You don't need to. I have nothing to offer you. You know what I mean? Like, please don't help me. But yet I'm like dying inside for you to come to me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm dying. You know what I mean? I have no more answers left. And these people were coming to court, and they would stand up for me. You know, the judge would be, and the judge knew, you know, that I was coming to AA, and I had put together a little time, you know, clean and sober. And when I got sentenced, you know, for these 3 felonies, like, I should have gone to prison. You know, there's just no other way around it, especially with my past charges and the things I had been involved in. And the judge showed me some considerable amount of grace, man. a considerable amount of grace. I should have done nothing less than 5 years, and he gave me 4 months. You know what I mean? And by the time he sentenced me, I think I had a year and a half sober. So my sobriety date is January 7th. I didn't get sentenced until, you know, I think it was like March of 11, you know? And that whole time I'm going to court every month, and they're giving me a little bit of rope to see what I'm going to do with it. And I put together some time here, and I got a job. My first job in recovery was working here at the club. You know, it was like 3 days a week for 4 hours at a time. It was perfect. You know what I mean? Making no money, really. You know what I mean? I'm not making any money, that I would consider money, but I was staying out of trouble. I had something to do. I was close to the meetings. You know what I mean? It was perfect for me. And I did that for about 6 months. There was another old man here, Paul Shields, who's since passed away, who I got to know, and just, it's just a trip, man, how you know, life begins to, the things you start paying attention to, you know, and the things you start involving yourself in. And so I got sentenced on these. So to be honest, I'm still on felony probation. You know what I mean? It's a almost 6 years into recovery, and I'm still on probation. So, you know, it's, I've worked real hard. Like, this time when I got back here, like, I was willing to do what you guys had, I heard the suggestion, get a sponsor, you work the steps. So I got a vicious sponsor, man, Daryl Nelson, you know what I mean? This guy, no bullshit, you know? And, that man, watching, first of all, I'd like to tell you that especially for the new people, man, you're never going to find the perfect human being here. You know what I mean? It's like so many times, I don't like this about him. I don't like that about her. It's like you're going to find a flaw in anybody you want to find a flaw in. You know what I mean? I don't agree with everything Daryl says, believes, or does even, but how that man conducts his life, the way he lives his life, I have the utmost respect for. That's why he's my sponsor. You know what I mean? Because I can pick that man apart every time, you know what I mean? Like, anybody knows him, knows, you know what I mean? but getting, and so, like, I was willing to take his suggestions. He said, do this, I did it. I didn't understand why or what was going to, you know, transpire from me doing these things. I just did it, you know, because I needed something else, and he had it. I heard where he had come from, and I saw where he was. And I said, show me how to get from where I am to something better than where I stand right now. And he has walked me through the process, you know, getting honest with that man in you know, right now at the fourth step and getting honest with him in the fifth step. Oh, man, just that relief, you know what I mean? Just like no strikes of lightning come down and relieve me of the bondage of self or anything like that. But just in the act of getting honest with a man for the first time in my entire life, I could tell you that some things were transpiring inside of me, you know. Letting go of some baggage that I swore I would hold on to the grave, letting go of that shit, man, absolutely relieving, you know what I mean? So, and then, you know, oh, man, just restoring, you know, like restoring the relationships with, like, my family. My dad, you know, when I sobered up, he's just like, thank you, son. I've been waiting for you. I love you. You know what I mean? But most everybody else, I've had to work to restore trust and some balance. And I caused a lot of, it didn't matter. It, financial, physical, emotional wreckage and damage in their lives. You know what I mean? It was like they were tired. It took some real time. And I remember hearing and reading in the book early on that there's a long road of reconstruction ahead of us, you know what I mean? And I was like, okay, I can do that, you know what I mean? I know that this isn't going to turn around overnight, you know? It's taken years for me to cause this damage in these people's lives. And so one day at a time, I just try and live a little bit better example to these people, you know, these people that I know care about me, that I care about, you know what I mean? I try, you know, it's like I come in And I'm so broken inside that I put up this facade that, like, I don't want you, I don't need you, just stay away, I'll keep you at bay, I'll give you this much of me to know and to care about. But when really I'm dying inside to know what it is to actually love, to feel for, you know what I mean? Just all the basic human needs, you know what I mean? Like, that I had become so disconnected from. These things are important to me now. Like Darren said, like, when he's fucking around at the beginning, he's like, but really, truly, like, it's an honor to get to know these men and their families and I look up to a lot of the men in this program. You know, some of them are here right now. Some of them have moved away. And the women, too, they give me a totally different perception of life and what it is to be open, you know, to be vulnerable. These things are not me. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is to be vulnerable. That's the most uncomfortable place for me, is to be vulnerable. You know what I mean? Like, for you to allow you to possibly hurt me one more time, you know what I mean? Like, who? No. Well, let's just stay here. You know what I mean? So it takes a lot of work. This stuff doesn't come overnight for me. You know, I've had to work, like, deconstruct who I am brick by brick. You know what I mean? Like, pull down all the defenses and all the fears and the preconceived ideas that I have of who I am and who you're going to be, you know, in order to just let you be you, find out who I am, and let's do this thing together. You know what I mean? And so to say that, that's why I say it's such an honor and a privilege, man, because I have no idea, like, what keeps me most interested in the process of recovery is I have no idea what door is going to open for me next. You know what I mean? If I get loaded, I know exactly what door is going to open, and it's probably going to be bars. You know what I mean? And they're going to close soon after. That's just where it ends up for me. You know what I mean? I can't tell you how many times I was willing to put my own physical life on the line to get and stay loaded. The situations I put myself in, the people I was surrounding myself with, absolutely no value in our lives, no value for the lives surrounding us, no value in the relationships of people that would die for us, you know what I mean? Getting and staying loaded was our primary purpose. And today to have been given, you know, to be shown, I don't think, I'm one of those people that believes that Alcoholics Anonymous is like a blueprint to a better life. You know what I mean? You can either build your life with this set of blueprints or not. You know what I mean? It's like nobody forces you to do anything around here. And I believe that's what makes this program so strong, is you are a member when you say you are a member. You know what I mean? This is you when you work for it. And I remember especially reading early on that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will slip away from us. And I was like, please, you know, I will do anything for that to be a reality in my life. You know what I mean? And since my perception of myself has absolutely shifted, I no longer view myself as a piece of shit. You know what I mean? I no longer view myself as someone who has nothing to bring to the table of life, of a relationship, of a friendship, of being a father, a son, a brother, you know, an employee, an employer, a sponsee, a sponsor. Like, I have something to bring to the table, and that's only because I've been willing to do what was suggested to me. You guys suggested get a sponsor, work the steps, get into service. I don't have any what I would consider service commitments right now, but I always, 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 every meeting I go to, I make myself a part of that meeting, whether it's cleaning your cup, wiping the table, fixing, it doesn't matter. Like, you know what I mean? I always give myself something of myself to the group or to a meeting, you know what I mean? It's important to me to give back, you know? And I'm just real grateful. I don't have much else to share. I know it's a little early. Is that going to be okay? Absolutely not, huh?
10 minutes.
10 more minutes. No, but I would just like to, if I could say anything to the newcomers, people that are coming back or whatever, like, really, I know that nothing that I say is going to change your life, you know, because the desire to live this thing has to come from inside each and every one of us. And it's not until we've come to a point where we're absolutely finished, no matter what, whether you're still holding on to a family or a job or whatever it is, or you're absolutely stripped of everything of worth in life, when you come to that point inside of yourself that you're willing to try this, that your life is going to change. And I had no idea the change that was going to transpire inside of me. You know, all this other stuff outside, the house, the cars, the jobs, all this stuff, I've flourished in all this stuff because I've worked for it. You know what I mean? But, like, internally, I had no idea, like, just what was going to transpire. You know what I mean? Just the human being that has been inside of me that has been dying to get out. You know what I mean? But I've always been blocked because, I don't know, you know, part of it I put in my upbringing, and part of it I put in my choice, you know, of wanting to keep life and other people at bay, you know what I mean? Not wanting to be found out because of shame and guilt, or not wanting to be found out just because I'm absolutely terrified of being hurt by you, you know what I mean? Or whatever the reason is, I've kept the world at bay. And coming up on 6 years of sobriety is like every day, every challenge I've faced has brought me to this point today. And I look forward to, because not every day is a joy to live. I'm not Jim Marr, you know what I mean? I don't. Not every breath I take is a joy to take, but I'm grateful because I know that whether today was a fucking great day or today sucked, like, I know tomorrow is another day. And if I stay sober no matter what, I don't pick up no matter what, I got a better chance at tomorrow. And really, it's in the challenges of life that I find out who and what I am. You know what I mean? I don't ask God in the morning to make this day an easy day. I just ask him, look, man, I'm here. Please give me what it takes to be of service to you and my fellows, and the courage to walk through whatever it is I face today. And so far I've put a few days together, and I'm just real grateful, man. And I thank the men and women that have come before me, you know, and I thank the people that come in after me as well, man. Not so much because you show me what it's like out there. I know what it's like out there. I know. And I don't ever look forward to going back to that lifestyle again. I love watching the people come in here because I like watching your life change from where you are to something greater than what you have when you got here, man. To be honest, that's one of the real gifts of recovery to me, is watching your life change. Thank you for letting me share.
All right, so where are we facing? Let's get enough. No.